It looks easy until you get up there and try it, you know, as far as leading singing or just calling out the right verse number sometimes. So appreciate you doing that. And I'd like to introduce myself. My name's Matthew Hanke, and I used to go to church here. No, I'm just kidding. But I am very glad to be back and very thankful for this church and the opportunity to be a part of that. Of course, a couple weeks ago, I was not scheduled to be gone, but I ended up going to take Brother Beal's place. And last week, I was with a college quartet. That was a scheduled event. So anyway, we want to continue to remember to pray for Brother Beal. He was feeling good enough to maybe come over for about an hour, a couple days this week, over to the office at the college. However, he also has been nailed this week with what the doctor calls post-concussion vertigo. Yeah, so it's not necessarily related to activity level. That is, he could have done nothing and still hit it, or he could have overdone it, you know, and it wouldn't necessarily have brought it on. Because, I mean, the first thought is, okay, well, he was doing more on Monday and Tuesday, maybe that brought it on, you know. But not necessarily related to that, it's just part of the healing process. So any of you who have ever battled vertigo or know someone that has, know how much fun that isn't. And, you know, it's Michelle hasn't quite yet found a chain large enough to tie him down completely, but he's having to discipline himself just to lay low, take it easy, and all that not-so-fun stuff. So continue to pray for Brother Beal. And if you notice a new decoration with Brother Spence. So I was just telling him before the service, I can honestly say I know how he feels. I had a very similar type of fracture. It didn't happen the same way, but very similar type of break. But he was working in the garage on Friday, took a fall, and landed awkwardly, broke a bone in his arm there. It's they call it a distal radial fracture, which means it broke the radius just below the wrist. And after the swelling goes down enough, it's going to require surgery to put it back together. And so you pray for them in the interim here. Adjusting is always not fun. And you have the surgery and then the physical therapy and all that. Just pray that the Lord will restore them to full use of that. That's always the goal, that you'd be able to function after. You can deal with whatever if you can function afterwards, right? So we want to remember to pray for that as well. Any other urgent requests this morning as we get started? Okay. Anything I'm missing, Pastor? Okay. Always want to mention. Yes. Yes. Okay. The better half of the Stevens couple is here this morning, but Pastor Stevens is home back in the bed sick. So you can tell him I said that, Miss Stevens. He'll appreciate that. But anyway, this was moving weekend for them, and you know, about Wednesday, Thursday, he came down with a nasty, you know, flu bug, chills, just the whole works, and basically has had to, you know, so he wasn't able to even supervise yesterday unloading the truck. So, you know, that could be good or it could be bad, but in some ways maybe it's good, but now all of a sudden they're realizing, wait a minute, that wasn't supposed to get packed up. Where is this? You know, so we get to go play hide and seek or just say, hope you can do without it for a couple weeks. But pray for Brother Stevens. Tongue is really wanting us to pray that he'll be well enough to sign papers tomorrow. I'd say that tongue in cheek, but they are supposed to do the final closing paperwork at the lawyer's office tomorrow, so pray for Brother Stevens as well. And, of course, remember our missionaries. Got the prayer letter from the Boylstons this week, I think. At least I got it on email. They're doing well. But they are both, John and Krista, are both physically suffering with John's, you know, a rash that turns into boils and, you know, then it kind of gets better. You know, that, you know, kind of going back and forth. So pray for them. Krista was having some difficulties, you know, before they left, and so we want to remember them, pray that the Lord will make their ministry effective. And then, of course, the Maietas, Lockharts and Trox, the Jennings, and then the Ibans. Okay, the Ibans, next Sunday, right, is their last Sunday, and then the following week they get on an airplane. So praise the Lord. We prayed for that time frame to come for a long time, and now let's just pray that it all comes together here at the end. In the right way for them. And we have another missionary visiting with us this morning, Ben Linville. Good to see you. And he has in-laws in the area, and So they're in the area for a little while. Stop by to visit us today. Always good to see you. Ben, I'm asking you if you would to open our Sunday school hour in prayer, and just remember as many requests as you can, okay? I guess I should have mentioned as sort of a praise too, Ms. Scoble's here today. Maybe you were here last week, but this is the first time I've seen you since surgery, so that's a step forward. We praise the Lord for that. Still got a ways to go with physical therapy, right? But good to see you. Glad you're able to be here. And praying that the Lord will restore you to full health as well. All right, we're going to be in the book of Numbers. Going to continue on. Going to do more highlights from the book of Numbers than necessarily straight through. What I mean by that is we're going to start in chapter 11, okay? Chapters 1 through 10, there are a lot of things that overlap with things that we've already covered in the study of the tabernacle, in the study of the sacrifices, and those related things. There's a lot of overlap here in the first 9 or 10 chapters or so. If I were going to summarize the first 10 chapters of Numbers, it would be this way. It gives the order of the camp, the organization of their travels, and then the offerings for the service of the Lord. Okay, it in detail how the camp was laid out, when they were to travel, how it was to happen. Okay, certain tribes set forward, and then part of the tabernacle furniture, and then more tribes, and then additional pieces, and then these, and then there was a specific order. So when they got there, basically the way it would work, when they got there, the tent and the courtyard and all those kind of pieces arrived first. You can imagine if you've got a caravan of people, a couple million people, it's not like even like the caravan that Stevens had the other day where he had two or three trucks and maybe a couple other vehicles. That's interesting enough sometimes to keep five or six vehicles on the road. And cell phones maybe makes that a little bit easier. But you can imagine the length of the caravan, just with that many people, all the goods they had in the world at that time are with them, their animals and that kind of thing. So that would be spread out. I mean, from the time the train started rolling on the front end till the time the back end actually got rolling, so to speak, it would take a good while. So the first ones would get there, they would begin to set up the courtyard and set up the actual tent of the tabernacle itself. Then by the time the furniture got there, a lot of times that would be set up and ready to go, and they could go ahead and move it right in, if they were going to set up for a period of time there. But anyway, those kinds of things are covered in the first 10 chapters of the book of Numbers. But, for the little bit that we haven't already covered, there's a lot that is overlap. So we're going to pick up in Numbers chapter 11, and just to kind of get the flow of where we are, there's lots and lots of chapters between Exodus chapter 19 and Numbers chapter 11. But the span of time from Exodus chapter 19 to Numbers chapter 11 is just a little over a year. Okay? Exodus chapter 19 is when they got to Sinai. Okay? They came to Sinai and God told Moses, "You prepare the people and I'm going to appear to them." Well, God appeared to them at Mount Sinai, caused the mountain to shake and to smoke, and there's lightnings and thunders and all that kind of stuff. And, boy, that was when the people said, "Moses, you talk to God and tell us what He said, but we don't think we can live through this again." Okay? Of course, then at that point, Moses went up on the mountain, spent a little bit of time with God, came back down. Then Moses went back up for 40 days, 40 nights, got the tables written with the finger of God, all of that. In the middle of that, you had the golden calf incident, where Moses came back down, dealt with that, went back up. But God had brought them to Sinai, and over the next 50 days or so, those are the events that transpired. Okay? Well, after the 40 days that Moses spent on the mount with God, they came back down. Then what did they spend the next several months doing? Building the tabernacle. Okay? Right there, they started having collections. Here's the materials that we need. And finally said, hey, we got more than we need. That's enough. No more offerings now. Let's just work on building it. But then they began to build the boards and the bars and to weave the fabric and to sew the coverings and all that kind of stuff. Now, you know, we think of it as, oh, okay, you know, go down to Lowe's, order the lumber that you need. Didn't exactly work that way. I mean, it was a very slow process. Even if you got lots of hands to labor, it's a slow process to mill the wood, to sand it, to plane it, to get it all ready to go. All of the wood on the interior of the tabernacle was gold-plated. Okay? Now, they couldn't take a vat and put an electrocharge in it, dip it in there and bring it, you know. They couldn't do some of the things that we do with painting or coating now. I mean, it was a more tedious process. So it took several months just to get all of that furniture built, to get all the fabric woven, to get everything all put together. During that time, of course, Moses is training Aaron and the Levites in all of the things related to all the sacrifices that we've already covered in detail, all the specifics. Okay, so they're sitting at the Mount Sinai, or as it's sometimes referred to in the Old Testament, the Mount of God. Okay, and they're sitting there for several months. I mean, they spent the first month and a half just twiddling their thumbs at the bottom while Moses is up on top of the mountain with God. Okay, but all total, it's about a year. Okay, the Exodus record tells us that they came out of Egypt. You remember God told them when He gave them the institution of the Passover. We said God reset their what? He reset their calendar. Okay, He told Moses this month is going to be the first month of the year for you. Okay, so you announce this is the first year, first month. Then the 10th day of the month, the Passover was set aside. The 14th day of the month was the actual Passover. And on the 15th day of the month, Pharaoh finally said, get out of here. Okay? So that was the first month. And then Exodus tells us it was the second month, or you know, the third month, right along there. About a month or so, month and a half, they got to Sinai. Okay? Then they spent about a year there, because in Numbers chapter 10, see if I can lay my hands on it here again real quick. In Numbers chapter 10, it says, you know, second year, second month, there it is, Numbers chapter 10, verse number 11. Came to pass on the 20th day of the second month in the second year. Okay? Numbers chapter 10, verse 11. Came to pass on the 20th day of the second month in the second year. That's obviously not the second year of creation. Okay? What we're talking about here is the second year after they've come out of Egypt. So they've been out of Egypt a full year. They're starting the second year. So they're a year and a month and 20 days having, you know, been out of Egypt, all right? That's the idea. Or, you know, from the time God reset their calendar. So that's why I say it was about a year that they were in camp there at Sinai, okay? All the Bible commentaries or study books that you read will give you the same timeline, okay? So they've been encamped at Sinai about a year, okay? So everything that went on in Exodus, Leviticus, and the first part of Numbers, all of that happened in a span of about a year, okay? Then we get here to Numbers chapter 11. But that context is not just time-filling, okay? There's significance to that, okay? Because over the last year, or year and a month, what has Israel seen? They've seen the Mount of God. They've seen the cloud, and Moses go up and spend time on the Mount of God. They've seen, you know, the mistake that they made with the golden calf. They've seen Moses come down from the mountain with tablets written with the finger of God. Okay, they've seen the construction of the tabernacle. They've been instructed, all right, here's the sacrifices you're supposed to offer. Here's the laws that your God expects you to observe. All of these, that, they spent the last year, in essence, if I could summarize it this way, they spent the last year learning about their God. Okay, they've been slaves in Egypt for 430 years. They were slaves a good part of that time. But that's 430 years from the time Jacob went down to the time they came out, okay? But they, for the last several hundred years, had been slaves. And they knew some about their God, but not everything, okay? So they had spent the last year really getting to know their God, if we could say it that way, or learning about their God. But the best way to know if you really know your God or not is to be tested, right? You know, when that gets put to the test, we find out how well we really learned the lessons. And it's one thing to sit in class while the teacher, you know, works the problem on the board or explains it and lays it out. It's like, It's another thing entirely to have it plopped in front of you and say, all right, solve this. Answer this. All right? You come up here and demonstrate it. Okay? And that's in essence, they're going to be tested on this. But all of this is significant to the setting of Numbers chapter 11. Because in Numbers 10, it says, all right, now God said, get ready to move. All right, they went as far as Paran. Well, they started moving. They went as far as Paran in chapter 10. All right, then in chapter 11, verse number 1, let's begin reading there. When the people complained, it displeased the Lord. And the Lord heard it, and his anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed them that were near the most parts of the camp. The people cried unto Moses. When Moses prayed unto the Lord, the fire was quenched. And he called the name of the place Taberah, because of the fire of the Lord burnt among them. And the mixed multitude that was among them fell a-lusting, and the children of Israel also wept again and said, who shall give us flesh to eat? Okay? So, here in Numbers chapter 11, we're going to see, and I don't know that we'll necessarily finish it today, but we're going to see in Numbers chapter 11, complaining displeases the Lord. Or I could say it this way, God hates complaining. Okay? If I were going to give it a title, that's what I would call it. God hates complaining. I have to give it a title because the soundboard guys have to have something to write down to, you know, put it on for later, okay? But and then we're not going to see just that God hates complaining or that, hey, I can never say if I don't like something. We're going to see why, okay? We're going to see the why before we get done with this study. But here, it's interesting. They have spent a year at Sinai, and now they're on the move. And the first significant event that's recorded here is complaining. Okay, number one, that's what we're going to see, is complaining. Okay? When the people complained, it displeased the Lord. Okay? Now, in verse 1, there's an unspecified complaint. Okay? Down, beginning in verse 4, down through a good part of the rest of the chapter, there's a specific complaint. They wanted meat. They wanted flesh to eat. Okay? However, there's two different names. If you look in verse number 3, chapter 11, verse 3, he called the name of the place Taberah. Okay? And then, if you look down in about verse 34, they called the name of that place Kibroth Hattaavah. Okay? Now, we'll tell you what those words mean. Okay? But my point right now is just simply to point out that there were two incidents, and the place got named after what happened there. So this, it's not that verses 1, sometimes Hebrew writers do it this way. You know, they give you a summary. Here's 3, 5, 7 verses, here's a summary. Okay? Now they're going to go back and explain it in greater detail. Okay? And my first thought was, okay, maybe that's what's going on here. But it's not. There's two different names, two different places, and there's different circumstances. Okay? So, we're dealing here with complaining. We're looking at two instances of complaining. The first one in verse 1, we have an unspecified complaint. Okay? When the people complained, it displeased the Lord. And the Lord heard it, and his anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burnt among them and consumed them that were in the uttermost part of the camp. Okay? Now, we're not told exactly what they were complaining about, but is it real hard to speculate? Yeah, I realize it's morning. But, you know, maybe you can think with me a little bit this morning. Okay? Can you come up with any reason why, you know, they've been, I'm going to give you a little hint here, okay? They've been basically stationary for about a year, and now they're going to start moving. Can you imagine how that would generate complaints? Okay? Has there been any, Mr. Tran, I know that it's never been vocalized at your house, but has there ever been any, you thought about complaining in the whole process of getting ready to move? Okay? You're at least tempted to. I know that's never happened at your house, but you know other people would be tempted to complain. Okay, we all know if you've ever moved, in some ways you'd rather take a beating or break a wrist than move, right? Mrs. Stevens can attest to that very well. Okay, so but that's what they're doing. They're moving. Okay, they as such as it was, we can look at it and go, Sinai, really? They're in the desert, but eventually, if you stay someplace long enough, you can make it home. okay? And you can get things situated the way you want them, and you know, you finally get used to dealing with it, and now the circumstances change. Can you see how that would generate complaining? Ugh. Finally got things the way I want them, and now I got to pack them up and move. Okay? How do I know if my decorations will match where we end up next? Well, they're going to pack up and live in the same tent, so then maybe they didn't have that problem. But you get my point. Okay? Now they've been settled, and now they're going to start to move. Okay? Just that in and of itself causes problems. Okay? If you have people, you have sin. And where you have sin, you have problems. So you can just fill in the blanks. Okay? What kind of problems? We got complaining just because of the difficulties of moving. Okay? You have complaining because, all right, maybe they didn't like how it was going. I told you, just in summary, the first 10 chapters in Numbers, we get instructions for when you move, these tribes go, and then these tribes go, and then, you know, this furniture, and then these tribes. Okay? So maybe, just maybe, the tribes at the back end thought they were getting shafted. Why do we have to wait till last? I want to go first. Okay? Man, we're at the end of the wagon train. So by the time everybody else has stopped and set up camp, and we're not even here yet, it's dark, and I'm trying to set up my tent and get the kids fed, and everybody's grumpy. You know, hey, they're people. Okay? And while their circumstances were a little bit different, it's not all that different than what we deal with. Okay? So before we go and just drop the hammer on how unspiritual they were, let's, you know, put our brains in gear and say, okay, you know, I face a lot of similarity in my circumstances too. Okay? So, but while we're not told, we can speculate with some, you know, with a reasonable degree of accuracy about some things that could have set them off. And the point is this. You can say, we can look at the verse 4 on down and say, boy, I've never complained about manna. But, you know, if we take that first phrase in chapter 11, verse 1, when the people complained, it displeased the Lord. Does that kind of apply to where we live? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all of us can identify with that, whether we want to admit it or not. We can all say, well, yeah, you know, I have been guilty of complaining. Okay? So when the people complained, it displeased the Lord. Right? So you have, in complaining, first of all, we have an unspecified complaint. Then beginning in verse number 4, we have, you know, ungratefulness for God's provisions. We have an unspecified complaint, and then we're recorded, ungratefulness. Verse 4, the mixed multitude that was among them fell a-lusting. The children of Israel also wept again and said, who shall give us flesh to eat? We remember the fish which we did eat in Egypt freely, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. Okay? Now, depending on your tastes, some of you are going, yeah, and some of you are going, ooh, right? Okay? Some of this, and you know, you may pick and choose even amongst this, okay? We all have things that we like more than others. And, you know, kids can grow up in the same house and not necessarily like the same things, right? I mean, you can have a garden, and the one kid loves the cucumbers and tomatoes, and the other kid hates that, but they love the carrots, okay? So, tastes are individual, they're unique is what I'm saying, but in general, these things that are mentioned in verse number 5, cucumbers, melons, leeks, garlics, onions, that in general were things that either were plenteous in Egypt, like the cucumbers and the melons, are things that the commentators would tell you were readily available in Egypt. The poor people as well as the rich people had that. That was just, you know, readily available in Egypt. And then the leeks and the onions and the garlics, that, you know, may well have been common staple foods in the diet of slaves or the laboring class of people. Okay? So, again, it was what they were used to. Okay? You eat something long enough, you can get used to it. In most every case, I'm sure some of you can give me I don't care how long I live, I will never like liver mush. Okay. All right, maybe you got a point there. But, you know, but in general terms, if you eat the same types of foods long enough, you can eventually learn to tolerate salad. Okay? You can learn to tolerate green beans or butter beans or carrots or, you know, liver or whatever it is that mom makes that you can't stand. Okay? But, you know, you can learn to tolerate it. You move from one region of the country to another, and you find that things that you were accustomed to eating all of your life now are no longer available. Last Sunday night, we were with a pastor, Pastor Fred Daniel. I don't know if any of you know him, but his brother's Tim Daniel in Kinston. Some of you may know of him. But anyway, they both are pretty heavily involved with worldwide New Testament missions. And he takes at least one, you know, sometimes a couple of trips a year. Well, he was telling me that we were sitting and just fellowshipping before the service. He was telling me that wherever he goes, they try to do what a lot of people do. They'll contact the missionary and say, hey, is there something that you can't get where you are that you would really like to have if we could bring it? Well, one time he contacted the family, and the wife had grown up in the South, and she said, boy, I miss grits. I would love to have grits, okay? Now, we've got quite the mixed reaction here. We've got enough transplants here that it didn't get an automatic amen, okay? But, all right. You throw out some other things. If we really want to reignite the war of Northern aggression, I mean the Civil War, we could start throwing out other terms. But the point is, this lady asked for grits. He said, that was a first for me. He said, but in my luggage, I took over to the mission field 30 pounds of grits. It packed in my suitcase. Had it wrapped and stuffed and mixed in and everywhere. And I'm like, wow. I'm just imagining in my mind the baggage handlers. You know, they're very gentle on stuff, right? I'm imagining them throwing this thing and then, you know, you got what happens? I mean, if it was me, I'm duct taping the bag so they don't split open on the flight, right? They can figure out how to get it open later. But anyway, the point is, that was something she grew up eating, and she really missed it, and she wanted it, okay? So before we're too hard on them for at least missing fish and leeks and melons and garlics and onions and those kind of things, let's just acknowledge there are things that you learn to like growing up, or things that you've eaten long enough that you're accustomed to them, that if you don't have them for a while, you miss that. And maybe the other stuff that you do have just isn't, I mean, you eat it because that's what you have, but if you had a choice, you'd rather have the other thing. Okay? And it was one thing to miss that, okay? But it was another thing to complain about what God had provided. Okay? Verse 6, now our soul is dried away. We're shriveled up. Okay, we're withering away to nothing. There is nothing at all besides this manna before our eyes. Okay, that phrase, before our eyes, kind of gives the impression that they were looking around. I mean, they were constantly on the hunt for anything else to eat. But you remember the case with Lot's wife. She looked back longingly towards Sodom and Gomorrah as they were being destroyed. It's also the idea of a longing or a wishing. Okay? There's nothing before our eyes but this manna, okay? And manna is almost a transliteration of the Hebrew word, and it just means what, or what is it? They called it, what is it? Because they knew what it was, okay? This, what are we having for supper? What is it? Okay? But they said, look, all we have is this manna. Now, again, before we are too terribly hard on them, let's just put ourselves in a different situation. Let's just say that whatever the circumstances are, whether the grocery budget's running low or whether, you know, in some cases when you're getting ready to move, and you will just try to eat on the supplies that you have, you know, and use up what you got because certain things you can't move or it's not. So let's just, you know, you got a whole bunch of one thing stuck in the freezer. Okay, so now what? You end up eating the same thing almost every day for a month. I didn't even think about it now, but that happened to you guys when you moved down here, didn't it? Okay, they had some stuff in the freezer and they were trying to use it up because they weren't sure they could move it all. Okay, well, I mean, the venison or the beef or the steak, you know, that was really good the first three or four times. Okay, the eighth time in 2 weeks, it's kind of like, oh, couldn't we have some chicken? You know, couldn't we have some pork? Couldn't we have anything else other than, you know? And that's kind of human nature. We enjoy the variety. Okay, but we'll hear within a short time after they came out of Egypt. You know, they came out of Egypt, their food supplies ran out, and they went to Moses and said, you brought us out here to die, we got nothing to eat. Moses said, God, what do I do? God said, you tell them in the morning to go pick up the stuff that's going to be on the ground and eat it. Okay, now some of you ladies would really have to get used to that. Son, go pick up our breakfast, lunch, and dinner off the ground outside. Okay, but nonetheless, they were accustomed to that. God had provided, and for a year, God had miraculously provided for them to eat. Okay, we're told here in the following verses a little description of how it tasted. But the point is, at this point, the point I'm trying to make is, how was this provided? This was provided miraculously by the hand of God. Okay? Whether you really, I mean, it doesn't matter what it is. You know, I happen to be one that really likes peanut butter. Okay? But if you eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, or even peanut butter and honey sandwiches, every day for 365 days in a row, eventually you'll hit your fill of it and you want something else. Okay? You really like bologna. You can eat it enough that you get tired of it. Okay? And here, that's kind of where they are. But they had forgotten in their focus on what was displeasing to them, they'd forgotten the source. Okay? So here, there's nothing at all besides this manna before our eyes. You see here, who against whom or against what are they really complaining? That's the point of this whole matter right here. They're not complaining against Moses, and they're not complaining against an inanimate object of food. Okay? They're not complaining about bread. They're not complaining about mom's cooking. They're complaining about what God has provided. Okay? And while God has never provided manna in the same way for you or me, I can look around the room and we can all say, hey, it doesn't look like anybody here is starving to death. Okay? So God has provided for us. He's taken care of our needs. But when we are tempted to be dissatisfied with that, we've got to remember the source. Okay? Who provided what we have? The Lord did. So we hear, that's why I say the complaint here was not just, well, we'd rather have something else. This was ungratefulness for God's provision or a lack of gratitude for what God had provided. Okay? And we can definitely be guilty of that, right? Verse 7 and a little on down, we get a little description of the manna. The manna was as coriander seed, the color thereof as the color of bdellium. Okay? Nobody has a really good idea what that was, okay? But based on other descriptions, they'll guess. We're told in other places it was like the hoarfrost, okay? And so the best guess is it was white, you know, like a hard frost or something like that, a white food. The people went and gathered it. Now, in Exodus, it just says they went and gathered it and ate it. Here, it says they went about and gathered it and ground it in mills, okay? Grind it like you would wheat or, you know, grains. Or beat it in a mortar, okay? Again, they would have the ability. They figured out a way to do different stuff with it at least, okay? Beat it in a mortar and baked it in pans and made cakes of it, and the taste of it was as fresh oil. When the dew fell on the camp in the night, the manna fell upon it. Okay, so here we're told it was as a taste of fresh oil, okay, or bread made with fresh oil. In Exodus, we're told that it had the taste of honey. Okay, you think, boy, I like, you know, sweet bread, got a little honey in it, you know, bread made with fresh oil, that sounds pretty good. But again, remember, day 365 of bread with honey. Okay, that's kind of where we are. And now, but compare that to verse number 5, cucumbers, melons, leeks, onions, garlics. Okay? While that was good, the bread with a taste of honey or with a taste of fresh oil, was it the same type of food that they were used to? No, it's very different than the diet they had been accustomed to. It didn't have the same flavorings. Okay? There weren't the seasonings. There wasn't the zip. They didn't have the pop. It didn't have the zest. It was just blah. Okay? At least after a while, that was the way they were thinking. Okay, verse 9, when the dew fell on the camp in the night, the manna fell upon it. Verse 10, then Moses heard the people weep throughout their families, every man in the door of his tent, and the anger of the Lord was kindled greatly. Moses also was displeased. Okay, so we see, number one, we see complaining. Number two, I want you to see with me the cause of God's displeasure. I've already touched on this a little bit. The cause of God's displeasure, but the cause was this, that they were ungrateful for God's provision, okay? And they were demonstrating their sin nature, okay? Now, we can be really, really brutally honest and talk about ourselves, but it's a lot more fun to use our kids as an example, right? Anybody that has kids knows that there are times when even though you've done everything you can to train them right, to teach them right, they demonstrate their Adamic nature. They demonstrate that sin nature. Okay? That's when, you know, when your wife calls and says, guess what your son did? Okay? Chances are he didn't just ace his test. Okay? Chances are it's something that mama's not happy about, therefore I'm not going to be happy about, and eventually he's not going to be happy about it. Okay? But the point is, we can look at our kids and say, boy, there are times when even though they know better, they just demonstrate their sin nature. Well, that's what Israel's doing here. They are demonstrating their sin nature. Okay? So the cause of God's displeasure is because they were dissatisfied with his provision. They were demonstrating, you know, their sin nature. They're living by their sin nature. But I want you to notice with me, number three, the consequences. And we won't finish this morning, I don't think. But the consequences. Okay? In both cases, we read this statement. Verse number 1, chapter 11, verse 1. The Lord heard it, and his anger was kindled. Okay? Verse number 10. Moses heard the people weep throughout their families, every man in the door of his tent, and the anger of the Lord was kindled greatly. Okay? The consequences. I mean, first of all, they made God angry. Okay? Now, I don't think any of us who are thinking straight at all got up any point in time in our life and say, you know what? My goal for today is to make God mad at me. I mean, if that's your case, you have serious, serious hardness of heart. Now, am I saying there aren't people in the world that have done that? Sure, there are people in the world that have done that. But those of us that know the Lord and in any sense are trying to live, you know, we even if we're not in a right relationship with God as far as tenderness of heart, we're certainly not trying to get God mad at us, right? Okay? And so here, the first consequence was they made God mad at them. The anger of the Lord was kindled. Okay? Now, as human parents, there are times when we are appropriately angry, and there are times when we are inappropriately angry. Okay? And that has to be very, very carefully guarded. Okay? But if God is angry and displeased, it's always right. Okay? God is holy. And if God's angry, it's not sin. God was angry for a just cause. Okay? In both cases, the Lord was angry because the people were, in essence, rebelling against his instruction. Okay? God said, it's time to go. I don't want to go. Okay? God said, here's what you're going to eat. I'm going to keep you from starving. I don't like this. I want something else to eat. If you really love me, you'd give me something besides manna. Okay? So in both cases, they are rebelling against the Lord here. Okay? So first of all, you have the anger of the Lord is kindled. All right? And then we have the judgment of the Lord. We have the judgment of the Lord poured out. We'll spend a little bit more time on that next week. But here's my point. Here's the point for today. If I'm dissatisfied with where the Lord's put me or what the Lord provides or how He provides, then I'm in no better shape than the children of Israel here, right? Okay? If I say, you know, I've got this car to drive, but they get to drive that one. Okay? I don't know how in the world somebody gets to drive a brand new Honda CRV. Well, that was a reference to Dana because, you know what she had to go through to get that. She had to get made into a metal sandwich, you know, she got to get that. But, you know, I can look at it and say, well, you know, I don't know why they get to drive a new car and I don't. I don't know why they get to live in this house and I have to live in this. You know, we can look at it, all of our circumstances, and say, well, God loves them more than loves me, or God's not fair to me, or any of that, anything along that line. Better be careful. Because we're complaining against a holy and a loving God. All that needs to happen in order for us to recognize where we truly stand is for God not to send the fire of heaven, but just to take His hand of blessing off and let us see where we would be without that. I mean, I look at it over and over again and think, you know, how the Lord has spared us in different ways. Sometimes the Lord spares you by you know, just protecting you from things where you don't have an accident. Sometimes He provides a new vehicle through that means. Okay? Sometimes the Lord spares you from health difficulties. Sometimes He allows it to come and then provides the means to take care of those things. Okay? But if I'm complaining against God, then I'm saying in essence that I know better than God. And God doesn't really love me. Okay? Well, just let God take His hand of blessing off a little while and find out, you know, where we really would stand without that. We'll understand how foolish that is. Okay? But what I want to try to ponder this week, and what I challenge you to ponder this week is, okay, in what ways am I like them? Okay? In what ways am I quick to complain, quick to be dissatisfied, or in what ways do I think that God's not fair to me because of fill in the blank? Okay? And then I need to stop and say, Lord, adjust my thinking. Okay? Help me to see Your person and Your provision. Help me to remember that You always have my best in mind. And if I don't get it, maybe I need to adjust my wanter. Okay? And we'll continue on with this next time, the Lord willing. Lord, thank You for Your word. Help us to be a grateful people. We thank You, Lord, for how You have provided, for how You love us, how You take care of us. God, I pray that our attitude will be pleasing to You and a good testimony to those around us. We thank You in Jesus' name.